Welcome to Women Leading the Way radio show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations, and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Good afternoon. This is your host, Quinn Tu. We're on this podcast, and it is my honor to have Graham Ross, co-founder of Kusaga Athletics, a company that is currently based in Australia. And I found Graham through an article that talked about running a marathon on the Great Wall of China. So for those of you who didn't know this, you can actually choose to spend 26.2 miles running up and down the Great Wall of China and parts of the village side. So Graham, welcome to the show.
Hi, Quinn. Thanks for having me here.
So we have to ask, how in the world did you decide that you were going to run the Great Wall Marathon?
I'm not quite sure I decided. I happened to be in Singapore at the time and went out to dinner with one of my wife's co-workers and her husband. And we're having a perfectly lovely evening. And halfway through the meal, he reached over to me and said, I'm going to go and run a marathon. Are you interested? And at that stage, I wasn't a runner at all. And I said, no thanks. But what marathon are you doing? He said, I'm going to go and run the Great Wall Marathon in China. I said, like on the wall. He's gone, yeah, you want to do it? And I said, no, I'll go away. So he called me on Monday morning. He said, mate, I've got the entry forms. You're going to do it with me. And after much backwards and forwards, eventually I found myself saying yes. And we set off to do the Great Wall Marathon in China.
So that was your first marathon ever?
My first marathon ever. If you ever want to form a bond with somebody, 42 kilometers, 5,200 steps, and an average temperature of about 35 degrees Celsius, it's a great way to form a bond. It was interesting at that time, Matt and I, we promised to train together in the lead up to the marathon, and due to work commitments, we didn't actually do one run together. And then I flew into Beijing on a different flight to him. And so the only time we actually spent any time in preparation was to actually warm up before the start. And it was an incredible achievement. It was an incredible experience. I think after the time we got to the finish line, and you know, Matt cried and I cried, and we both swore we'd never do it again. But what we didn't know is that would actually lead us to becoming business partners a couple of years down the track.
Wow. Well, I can certainly relate to, you know, your experience at your first marathon particularly. But, you know, I used to believe that people who ran anywhere were crazy. Then I had my own journey to completing a marathon, and it was a very emotional experience at the end as well. But I did not jump in the deep end like you in terms of which marathon to run. But you mentioned that out of this incredible bonding experience came a business opportunity. What happened?
Yeah, I then moved from before I moved, I started to sort of discover a bit more things around Singapore, and I moved into doing triathlons. In fact, I remember doing my first triathlon. It was a small sprint triathlon, so that's like a short swim, a short bike ride, and a short run. And I didn't have what we commonly call road bike these days. I had an old mountain bike. In fact, I had a mountain bike with knobby tires. And I couldn't work out why, when I was out on the bike leg, that people were going past me so fast. So I went on to do like a few more triathlons and longer distances, and I found myself in London and doing a bit more competing across Europe. And one day I was I opened my wardrobe, and I hadn't really realized until that moment, but there was this massive pile of finisher shirts. So every time you finish a race, the event gives you a shirt, and they're great because they say, you know, I swam, I biked, or I ran this, and it's a really nice memento. And you can generally find people, it's a nice thing you put on at the end of the race and wear home on the plane. Yeah. So I had this massive pile of shirts, and I kind of thought to myself, well, wow, that's a lot of shirts. And I actually don't wear any of them. And the reason I didn't wear any of them is because most of them didn't fit properly. The material felt really horrible on your skin. And after a few wears, that retained the sort of that running body odor that, you know, you kind of don't like to take out in public. And so I think this is really strange. And I suppose here's a voluntary admission. My wife worked out very early on when we started dating that I was pretty poor at choosing my clothes. And so she's been buying my clothes for most of our relationship. And so I had no idea what these materials, you know, what my clothes are made of. And so I looked at these shirts just as a curiosity. And they were basically made of polyester and nylon, a bit of spandex. So I rang up a few of my friends, and I said, do you guys wear those shirts that we get from the events? And they said, no. And they all said the same thing. You know, they fit properly. They smell after a few wears, and the material's really horrible. And I was between careers at that stage. I thought, oh, well, there's actually a business here, because it's like I do races where there's 3, 5, 10,000 people and we all get T-shirts. And I thought, well, that actually seems like a waste if everyone else is like me. So I took that, took down polyester, nylon and spandex, and I put that into, you know, the world's encyclopedia, Google, and and started to discover more about these materials that were in my wardrobe. And to be honest, I was shocked. I was really, really shocked in regards to the impact that my wardrobe had on the planet in regards to CO2 emissions, water usage, pesticides, landfill issues. I didn't know.
So what kind of impact did you find out your wardrobe was making on the environment?
It was ugly. It was really ugly. So an average cotton T-shirt. So we all own a cotton T-shirt. I'd be pretty surprised if anyone hasn't got some form of cotton product in their wardrobe all over the world. And so if we take an average cotton T-shirt uses about 3,000 liters of water, just for one T-shirt.
Wow.
And so.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, for those of us who have a problem visualizing, like me, that's like 1,500 2-liter soda bottles. Or I looked this up because I was preparing for the show, and that's 792.5 gallons. So think about the milk gallons, and you're talking about that's what it takes for one cotton T-shirt. That's remarkable.
Yeah, it's frightening, isn't it? And I think when I speak about the company at times, I ask people, it's like, imagine your wardrobe and you can see people counting. And most people have got probably 10 items of cotton. And so 10 times 3,000 litres is actually the equivalent of a small swimming pool. And you go, wow that's just in my wardrobe.
Wow.
So then I had cotton,
no polyester, no nylon. What are we supposed to wear?
Well, I think, this is kind of where I transitioned into. So I did all this research and I discovered the impact. And polyester is a man-made petrochemical. So there's a whole this whole manufacturing process, CO2 emissions, and some polyesters can take almost 200 years to break down in landfill. And while they're doing that, they're giving off noxious odors. So it's a real challenge. The challenge, I suppose, we face with our clothing is polyester is a remarkable fabric. You know, it's got great stretch, it's got great wearability, but it's quite harmful in its manufacture and end of life. And so I figured that, you know, it didn't make sense to me. So I thought, surely somebody is doing something else with natural material. So I think we all know about hemp and bamboo.
Uh-huh. And that, yeah, yeah.
Is that, Yeah, they're great materials, and I think that they do have some challenges themselves. But I don't know how to make a suit or a wedding dress, but I figured I could make a running shirt because I was a runner, and so we I had to go and find some fibres that were a little bit better than sort of a bit more flexible than hemp and bamboo, and so I went back to Google and did a bunch of research, and over a period of time I found fibers, and a lot of these fibers are discovered through laboratories and white papers, places I probably didn't have any right to be researching, and so I found all these fibers, and then I just literally picked up the phone and I rang these laboratories or these mills and said, hi, I'm Graham, you don't know who I am, but I'm really interested in your fibers. And over a period of time, they were wonderfully supportive, and they gave me the fibers to use. And so then I had to go back to Google and go, how do you make fabric? Because I've got no background in the textile industry. And once I understand that process, I managed to find a mill in Korea. And I called them up and said, hi, I'm Graham. I've got all these fibers you haven't heard of, but I want to make some fabric.
What types of fiber were you experimenting with?
Yeah, we did experiment with a bit of bamboo. We experimented with corn in various ways, some eucalypt, and a couple other different wood products, waste wood products, that were already in a fiber position. What we needed to do was understand. I didn't want to make a single fiber garment. I wanted to make a blend of garments because I felt that would give us more scope in not only the hand feel and the comfort, but also the performance.
Sure.
And so over a period of time, we had lots of failures. Like I remember the time we sent in 20 kilos of fiber and 3 yards of fabric came out of the mill and it was useless.
Wow.
And I'd literally begged and borrowed to get the 20 kilos. So I had to go back to the fiber manufacturer and plead for some more. We had times where just in the development process was really stretching the mills. And I remember one day one of the mills called us up and said, okay, we've kind of got a bit stuck in our development. What do you guys think? And I remember thinking that was really strange having, there's Matt and I, our backgrounds are in television and no background in textiles. And the mill was going, well, what do you guys think? And we kind of went, here's our educated guess, and that actually set us on a path to get the fabric towards its finished product. So we set out to make one fabric, and we managed to make four. Three are plant-based fabrics, and one is a degradable polyester. So in regards to polyester, the manufacturing process is all closed loop, so we recycle all the liquids that are used in the manufacture, but then also at end of life, there's a process to break down the fabric so it doesn't end up in landfill, or alternatively recycle, which is the next opportunity.
So in terms of measurement, you've got the cotton t-shirt that uses about 3,000 liters of water in the whole process. And the shirts that you've developed, what is the impact there?
Yeah, so once we developed our fabric, that led us on to, we made them into run shirts, and Matt was training in his and I was training in mine. We thought this is working really well, but we didn't actually have a business model at that stage. We didn't know that anybody really cared about their clothing. We didn't have enough market knowledge to know that people either knew the impact of their wardrobe or really cared. And so So we thought, well, what we need to do is we need to create a product, and we need to find out. So we decided that if a cotton t-shirt uses that amount of water, let's make our own t-shirt. And so we made our own t-shirt, and then we created a Kickstarter campaign, so a crowdfunded campaign to raise the profile of the shirt, but also to get some feedback as to whether anybody really cared and could we actually turn this into a business.
So when did you have the crowdfunding?
In 2015.
Okay, and how did that go?
Yeah, so we made what we called the greenest t-shirt on the planet, which is a catchy Kickstarter title. We compare it to an average cotton t-shirt, like we said, uses 3,000 liters of water. our equivalent uses less than 1% of that. We're at 21.9 litres of water use. And depending on where we source our fibres from, either no pesticides or very minimal amount of pesticides. Hypoallergenic. I just had a friend come back from Mount Everest where he wore the shirt as a base layer for 17 days. And he said he believed that it got to about 14 or 15 days before he felt that his shirt actually had any body odour. And it's compostable. So, it can go back into the ground. So, when we talk about things like circular economy, comes out of the ground, goes back into the ground. So we successfully funded that. But what was really important about that whole experience was we got to talk to our customers. We got to talk to people to hear their stories and their frustrations of not being able to find environmentally friendly clothing, but also, at the right price. We also had one of our greatest educations in our business where we were manufacturing, we'd made the fabric and we'd successfully funded the Kickstarter. And I remember ringing up the factory in Malaysia who was going to make our shirts. And we'd had a great relationship with these guys for quite a while. And I said, hi, I got some great news. We've just been successfully funded for our T-shirts. So we're ready to place an order. And the gentleman there said, that's fantastic, Graham. I'm so excited for you. But I've got some bad news. And I've gone, oh, no, what's wrong? And he said, we're closing down the factory. I can't get enough skilled workers. And so we'd successfully funded our Kickstarter campaign. We found out that people actually cared. And then I went back to the mill and they were closing their doors. And so what I had to do two things. One, I had to find another, mill, which we did. Uh-huh. But then also I had to go back to all those people who had pledged their hard-earned money for these shirts and tell them something. And I remember coming home and talking to my wife, and I sat down and I said, we've got two choices. One is we can just say, oh, there's been a slight delay. We'll get you your shirts sooner or later. Or we do what we wanted to do, which is be a very authentic, open company and tell people what happened. And so I sat down and I started saying, okay, the shirts are delayed. Our apologies, this is what's happened. And while I was there, I thought, well, why don't I tell them a few of the other things that went on in our period? And I told them a whole bunch of challenges and things that had gone wrong and, how we felt and that sort of stuff. And then I sent it off to our pledges. And woke up the next morning and I had an inbox full of people replying. And it was really lovely. They said, we of course want our shirts, and so when you've got them ready, please deliver them. But basically, we want to be part of your journey. We want to hear some of these stories. Like, it's great that you're successful with your Kickstarter, but we want to be part of the journey. We want to hear the successes, and we want to hear the failures. We want to hear how you're feeling about things. We want to be part of it. And so that was a really incredible. It's really, really pivotal. And I think about that a lot in day-to-day business about how do we involve our community and how do we share the journey with all those people who are supporting us.
Yeah. And that's actually a good transition into the next part of the show that I want to focus on. Part of the reason why I was so excited for us to connect is because I also like to run outdoors, and I really believe in environmental conservation, and the problems that you share about the running shirts and the odors and all of that, I'll jumping up and down saying, me, I have those mm-hmm. problems too. So it's great to know that somebody has put their minds to solve the problem. But the other reason why I was very excited to reach out to you is you are what is known as a certified B Corp. How mm-hmm. did you get connected with the B Corp community?
Yeah, wow. I love the B Corp community. Our journey was the fashion industry I think we can fairly accept they're pretty good at greenwashing, not always telling the right story and promoting things that are more environmentally friendly than they really are. We had a bunch of certifications on our fibers and our fabrics, which is important, but I felt that as a company, we wanted to be known for more. We wanted to be a bit more authentic than having this this unknown seal. We needed to communicate, I suppose what we learned from Kickstarter, we need to communicate who we were as a company and what we were trying to do better. And you know, when we started this business, I didn't start this business to sell T-shirts. I started this business to make a difference to climate change. And by buying one of our T-shirts, you directly are playing your part. So just by buying a T-shirt, you can actually start to make a difference and change an industry. And so that's where we kind of came from. And I remember looking everywhere for different certifications, and I came across B Corp. And what intrigued me most about B Corp was, I resonated with what they were saying, using business as a force for good. I looked at the companies that were there, headlined by Ben & Jerry's, Patagonia, and companies like that.
Yeah.
And there's so many more now. But also what I liked, as we were a small emerging company, we were learning about the framework of what was the business going to be like. The idea of Casagra Athletics is to have a 100-year-old company, and we think about that all the time. And so what B Corp gave me was the framework to set up a business that had a social purpose, had an environmental purpose, but also had a framework for us to help develop our culture, where as the business grow, we grew as a company, but we also grew as a staff, as community together. And B Corp gave that. And the other thing I really liked about it, they're incredibly inclusive. So you can talk to any B Corp anywhere at different stages. There's a lot of support for it. And it's also incredibly hard to be certified. I think there's only 2,400 companies globally.
They have very high standards to meet the certification. That a difficult process for you?
Yeah, it was a challenge because it made you face the facts of whether you've done something or hadn't done something, or it was like an audit. It was an audit effectively. What they also do is the framework is there for any company. You can access the certification for free. In fact, I think they said the other day 65,000 companies have accessed the framework and are using it within their company, but haven't actually gone to the certification process. So obviously it's a little bit easier
I was just going to say what you're referring to is their assessment that you can apply to your own company and see if you're making any kind of progress in this area or if you need to bone up on some other aspects. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say, so we went through the certification process and we did very well from an environmental point of view. We were a bit low on our social numbers because we didn't really have any staff, but we've been working on that. But also gave us some framework to set some targets for the next 12 months. And so we certified in 2016. We were awarded best for the world, and so we're in the top 2% of B Corps for the environmental category last year, and then we just received the same best for the world 2018 for the environmental category again this year. For me,
that's
a really
amazing.
Exciting. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I'm a bit excited because when we started thinking about the company, I based our kind of foundation on two companies. One was Patagonia, the great US outdoor company, but have been environmental activists since they began, real leaders, and Under Armour. And Under Armour, who built business before social media.
Wow. That's, you know what, congratulations on getting named as best for the world 2 years in a row as an emerging company. That's really a testimony to how impactful one person or a group of people can have on any aspect of the environment or their community. That's amazing.
Yeah, I think it's about doing good by like being good by doing good. And I think one of the things we do try is that we're very collaborative and very open with what we're doing. And we set a real serious attitude in regards to how we do business. And from our point of view, there's always stories of supply chain challenges, especially when you're working outside of your own country. But we've managed to influence our supply chain to change the way they do business, so the way they handle their business from an environmental point of view. And so we've been able not only to be able to have an environmental statement from our point of view as a company, but it's actually reverberating through our supply chain. And that to me is a really wonderful thing to do.
Yeah, because that definitely will have an impact on the fashion industry as a whole, as your suppliers become aware and educated on what their impact is and how it affects everybody else in the pond, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of talk about, especially from a fashion point of view, that consumers not buying stuff, not buying clothes. And for me, I think that's the wrong way of looking at it. Consumers, by their very nature, should be allowed to consume. We, as the producers of the product, have to make sure that we are making products that are environmentally suitable, but also we've got a plan for an end of life. It's pointless just making stuff and then just leaving it with the consumer to have to dispose of. And so the industry is changing, and some of the big players are declaring they'll be 100% recyclable by 2030, which is fantastic. We just, as businesses, we have to take care of our own. And if we are making the product, we have to be part of our production has to be to take care of the end of life. And from not only from an environmental point of view, but financially, it may actually make sense. Taking back your product and reusing it makes sense rather than just having to start from raw material every time.
Yeah, that's a perspective that not a lot of the fashion industry has, but I do agree with you that it is growing in popularity, and I can think of about 4 or 5 companies that are starting to ask consumers to return their product at the end of life. What does Kusaga do with the products that you're taking back?
Yeah, so The first answer to that is we've only been in the market retailing for about 16 months.
And, okay, so too early to be taking anything back.
I got a message from one of our pledges from our Kickstarter, which is about 2 years ago now, and he said to me, he wears our shirt once a week, and he said it's still perfectly fine. So, what we have got planned is that we will be taking back. So there'll be a take back scheme. We're just pulling that together now for our garments, and there'll be some support for our community to buy the next product. But also part of that will be sharing the process of what we'll do at the end of life. So whether we recycle it or whether we break it down. So all those plans are in the market. We haven't had to do that yet. What we're actually excited about, we're about to release our third fabric in the next month or so, and that fabric's called Eco Soft, and it is by the very nature, it is 100% plant and super soft. So I'm really excited about this material, because I think it will be the material that will start to break out of the sportswear market and into much more mainstream fashion and bedding products.
Wow. Well, I believe in comfort, and I like a good, comfortable clothes, regardless of whether it's in the fashion industry or the athletic industry. So I'm looking forward to that. In terms of, people wanting to reach out and contact you or find out more about Kusaga Athletics, where would you like our listeners to go?
Well, yeah, I'd love to hear from anybody who wanted to reach out. We have a website. So it's Kusaga Athletic, one word, .com. And if someone, you can find us on Twitter, Kasaga Athletic, Facebook, Kasaga Athletic, and Instagram, Kasaga Athletic. And if you want to send us an email, we always love to hear from people. Email us on Curious, C-U-R-I-O-U-S, at KasagaAthletic.com. And you will find us. We'd love to hear from everybody.
Well, I think you've got all of the social media and various contact methods covered. I am so excited to see what you're going to do, the end of life and recovery part of the garments that you're creating as you go along, given how innovative you've been in terms of creating the fabric from the ground up and all of the research and thought that you've put into it. I can't wait to see what you come up with as you figure out how to recover and reuse or recycle a garment at the end of life. That's going to be really exciting.
Yeah, no, we've already got some plans, which is well advanced, but also we're talking with many other companies. One of the great things when we first started this business, the fibers we use have existed, but without technology, we wouldn't have been able to achieve what we've achieved to date. And now we're moving in that next phase where technology is helping us with the recovery and recycling methods, whether that's using chemicals, mechanical machines to break things down, or where there's enzymes that are breaking up, eating away the natural fiber to leave the man-made fiber. And it's a whole bunch of things going on. And it's what it needs now is the industry to be focused on lowering its impact across the environment, across the supply chain, the whole industry. And then that will encourage more and more companies like ours and others to start being very innovative and developing techniques and methods to extend the life of fabrics and to kind of close the loop, so we don't end up sending the amazing amounts of textiles to landfill all over the world.
Yeah, well, that is a really inspiring note to end on. Unfortunately, I know I could talk to you for hours, but we are out of time, and I'd really like to say thank you to Graham for being our leading gentleman today, even though this is a show mainly focused on professional women. We like to recognize men and women who are doing good and leading the way in how they're changing the face of business. So special thanks to all of our listeners, both in the U.S. and internationally. And, we'll be back again for another Women Lead Radio show on Mondays at 9 and Fridays at 2 p.m. It's been my sincere pleasure to have you on the show today, Graham. And I just want to remind everybody, when your business does good, it's good for your people, your planet, and your profit. So keep doing good, everybody.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.